Do you believe
that you are number one? Do you believe that you are me? This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the thought for today. Do you believe that you are me? Now, a lot of you say, well, yes, I'm you, Herb. I'm you. You know, I can see that I'm you. And I say, I don't mean me. I don't mean Herb Barley. Do you believe that you are me, yourself? And you say, well, of course I'm myself. What else should I be, you know? Well, the thing is, what do people do? People spend their entire life trying to follow the fashions, the trends, trying to follow the rules set by other people. Now, Ellen was just telling us about her mother's wedding and honeymoon. And on her honeymoon, she went down to the middle of Italy to a beautiful lake, and it was in the wonderful month of May, a little cool yet. And her mother and father had just been married, and they were so happy and so delighted, and her mother felt very risque, and so she cast off her clothing and naked went into the lake and swam around like a mermaid. And everyone who saw it and realized it, they said, God, if only I could do that. She's got guts. Now, she wasn't going in to make a statement on sexuality. She wasn't going in to try to show off. She wasn't going in to do anything. But she was just in a hurrah moment of her wedding honeymoon time. And many people do this in their hurrah moments of their honeymoon time. For the first time in their life, they expose themselves to each other. Of course, in this day and age, people seem to have relationships before they get married. Marriage is no longer a treasure trove where all of a sudden in the honeymoon they find out what sex is all about and what love is all about and what, you know, relationships are all about. So you can't use that as a criteria anymore. But Ellen's mother, and this was back in about 1927 or 26, 27, 28, right in there, when she got married, right? Wasn't that about it, Ellen?
Yes.
And when they got married, they were in Italy having a great old time. It was before the wars in Europe got under full swing, and they were just having a wonderful time. And they were enjoying themselves. They were being themselves. And Ellen's mother had always been a flamboyant pianist and musician of many sorts, and loved dancing and loved singing and loved everything. And she just had a great love for life, which she expressed in her flamboyance. It's just like Michelle Obama wearing a pair of shorts off the plane in
Arizona.
At the Grand Canyon. She got off Air Force One at the Grand Canyon and went to have fun at the Grand Canyon wearing a pair of shorts, and all the world was a gosh, because here the fashion sender for the world was wearing shorts. Well, you can be sure that just like during the Second World War, when people were allowed to do all sorts of things they couldn't do otherwise, women were working in factories, and so they were wearing slacks. They didn't want to wear dresses at their machines and stuff like that. They wanted to take over the man's job, and so they wore slacks. And then they wore special skirts. I forgot what they call them. And they were slack skirts. They were creased up the middle there, but they were a shorter length, just to the knee. Today we'd call them shorts. But they wore them, and their employer may have said, why are you wearing those type of things to the work here? Well, because we are for the war effort. Well, you see, anytime you say it's for the war effort, it was okay. Nobody could really fault you for doing that. Well, now, when Michelle Obama went in her shorts off of Air Force One, as the first lady of the world. How could she do that? That was a slight to all of fashion. And she said, no, it isn't. She said, I'm going to teach the people of the United States a lesson that I learned early in life from my parents and my world. And that lesson is that I've got to be me. I've got to follow what my values are. And what I think is right is what I have to do. And it's not that I am affronting other people, not that I'm telling other people what they're doing is wrong. I'm not telling other people that they have to live like I do. I'm just saying, hey, this is me. How long have women gone to the beach wearing long-legged things and long-armed things? And my gosh, the weight of their costume that they go swimming in would have drug them down. And men wear shirts and things like that. It's the silliest thing. I mean, because everybody's the same. And when you go swimming, you should be able to go swimming. Actually, swimming should be the first word that says swimming, it's naked. Everybody swims naked, you know. And what a wonderful, nobody think a thing about it. Can you imagine yourself going into the bathtub wearing swim trunks? I mean, you know, it's quite interesting. So, you see, who are they who are going to set and be the fashion trend setters? Who are they? Well, now, you don't really care. I look at each one of you, and I say to myself, my God, where did their fashion trend-setting role model come from? Who is the role model for Ingeborg? Who is the role model for Sylvia? Who is the role model for Ellen? My goodness sakes, they're each quite different. And yet they have similar type clothing, but yet they're quite different. Now, having their figures be a little different too offers a little comment there, but hey, the body's the body. Now, what you want to do with that body is you want to do what the natives have done historically. The only reason natives in Africa or anyplace else wear clothing is because they were decorating themselves. They were using it to decorate themselves, to make themselves look pretty, to make themselves look charming, to make themselves look different. Now, you've heard some of the strange customs that are going on around the world, and you think to yourself, my goodness sakes, what an obvious stupidity. But perhaps people look at us and say, what an obvious stupidity. People look at us and they say, how can you do that? How can you do that? Now, how can you do that? And that's our question this morning. We can do it because we've got to be me. You've got to be who you are. If you pretend to be anything other than who you are, it won't work. If you want to be like Twiggy, what's the first thing you got to do? Lose weight. you got to be a skinny nothing, you know? Well then, why try to be a Twiggy when it's not your nature? I mean, Twiggy is not the role model for the world. Of course, Twiggy's long since gone, but she's a good illustration. She's not the role model for the world. She was just the role model for a skinny fashion figure, you know? And whose clothing would fit on her? The average person, the average lady, if Twiggy wore their clothing, she'd look like she's got her bathrobe on, you know? And she wasn't dressed charmingly at all. Now, you have to be your own Twiggy. You have to be your own fashion model. You have to be your own person who sets the role for how you're going to live and act and be and do under all circumstances. Now, do you have the courage to be a Michelle? Do you have the courage? Mm-hmm. No, you don't. No, you don't. You don't have the courage to be a Michelle. You have to always say, don't I look pretty? Don't I look lovely? Well, who gives a hoot and holler in hell whether you look pretty or lovely? Do you think you look pretty or lovely? And then that's all that matters.
That's right.
Do you understand that?
Yeah.
You don't need the approval of anybody else in this world as to how you look, because you came out wearing what you were wearing, and then you said, how do you like it? Well, what are they supposed to say? You look like hell. You know? You look terrible. you look lousy. Who would have the unkindness to say that to you? I mean, that's pure unkindness to say that, because that's our opinion. Our opinion is that you look miserable. Now, maybe if I knew you for a while, and I knew your wardrobe, and I knew your styling, and I knew your pattern, and then you came out with some clothing that was something I hadn't seen before, but yet it fit the pattern, I'd say, my, doesn't that look nice? Mm-hmm. You know? And I wouldn't say, don't you look beautiful? Doesn't that enhance your qualities of magic and so forth and charm about you? Which would be a lovely thing if I would say something like that. Mm-hmm. And of course, a diplomat would. But are we diplomats? Are we diplomats? Or are we all going around telling the truth about people? Well, now, who's the truth? If I were to dress like Sylvia thinks I should dress, I don't know what I would look like. I have no idea what I would look like, because Sylvia thinks that everything I wear is beautiful. Sylvia thinks that everything I do is wonderful. Sylvia thinks that everywhere I go and everything I say and all the people I meet are just fabulous. Now, Sylvia may be alone in this opinion. The rest of the world may not feel that way at all. The rest of the world may think, hey, why doesn't he do this? He's the chairman or president or whatever he is of a university. He's dean of a university. He should act like a dean of a university, you know. And what do deans of universities wear? They wear bow ties, you know. What do newspaper writers and editors wear? Bow ties. Well, hey, that's back in the 60s and 70s, maybe 50s, you know. And what are you talking about, bow ties? Well, look at it. Whenever they try to have a criteria for a person, what does the first lady wear? Beautiful gowns, right?
Mm-hmm. Also.
Who ever thinks of the first lady wearing anything else but beautiful gowns? Really? When the first lady comes into the ball or comes into any activity, she is wearing a glorious gown. The latest fashion, the most beautiful, and the government pays for it. They should, because she is representing the government as the first lady. And the president, the government clothes the president, because he is representing, if he had to clothe himself and he wore things that he might normally wear, he might have his farm coveralls on, you know, if he was from farm place. And then, of course, President Truman, what should he do? He should wear a hat all the time, because he used to be a haberdasher. Now, isn't it interesting? But you always have to be you. Now, the president is going to go to a diplomatic meeting. So he's taking his tennis shorts out and his tennis sweater and his racket, and he goes to the diplomatic meeting. And they still say to him, what's all this about? Well, as soon as the meeting's over, I'm playing tennis. Well, you know, you could change after the meeting is over. For the meeting, you should have your suit on, or you should, you know, dress somewhat respectful. They're getting closer to wearing just shirts, you know. But you should dress somewhat respectful, showing that you respect everybody who comes here. All these newspaper men who come to represent their newspapers when they come to these meetings in Washington, they wear suits and ties. Because that is their sign of respect. And, okay, now, what if, I don't know a famous newspaper man, but what if Brinkley, you know, what if some famous newspaper man was going to come and interview the president? And this famous newspaper man was retired. And they called him back from retirement and said, go visit, interview the president. Your interviews are always great. He says, I was just going to play tennis. That's okay, go ahead. So in his tennis togs, he goes to visit the president. He couldn't do it. He couldn't do it, because all of his life he has been trained to have a suit and tie on when he went to do an interview with anybody. And with the president of the United States, he'd put on his tuxedo, almost, you know. He'd want to be very proper, very proper. Well, what is it that you would like to do? We're talking a lot about fashion and role models and things, but who's your role model? Was your mother your role model, your parents, your father? Was your teachers? Who were your role models? Now, a lot of people attend the University of Healing, and they find the University of Healing just exquisite, and of course they would. And they study the courses of the University of Healing, and they make them theirs, because they read the lesson 3 times a day for 7 days, and when you do that, you have just inculcated that into your being, as so you and the course are one. And so then, they're ready to go and wing it. And they leave the university as a graduate, they leave the university as an accomplished student, and as they're out there, they're thinking of all the illustrations that I have shared with them, or that the university shared with them, and they think to themselves, that's a good illustration. You know, I want to tell my people that I'm talking to, the lectures that I'm giving, the stories and things I'm giving, I want to use those illustrations. And I say, go ahead. Any organization, publication, or anything like that says, go ahead, just give credit for what was where you got it. And then use it. Or put it in your own words. Make it really yours. Put it in your own words. Don't just copy somebody else. Now, we have the bard who has gotten credit over the years for a great deal. And one of the things he's gotten credit for was the statement, to be or not to be? That is the question. And on. And so this soliloquy comes to us courtesy of William Shakespeare. And we think to ourselves, to be or not to be? Shakespeare said it. To be or not to be? Shakespeare said it. To be or not to be? Well, pretty soon that gets sickening, you know. Because who cares whether Shakespeare said it or not? How are you using it? In what relationship are you using it? To be or not? To accept the responsibility or not to accept that responsibility? That's really a choice that we have to make. To live my divine self at all times, or to feel there are moments that I don't have to do that? See, these are things that I have to consider. Now, we reword these things and make them ours. We make all of life ours. Now, when great people do great things, and they're considered great, who had been their forerunner? Who had been the person who went before them and did great things? Well, all the world. But great statements are coming out of people, and if we were to really look at them, they go back into history. Somewhere in history, someone else had said them, almost verbatim. Someone has said those statements, but we have to make them ours. Now, I would say to you, if you are a Shakespearean thespian, if you're a Shakespearean enthusiast, and you really have an aficionado for being the Shakespearean studies, and you go around prattling these Shakespearean idioms and phrases, and people say, oh, he's a Shakespearean idiom. You don't say before each thing that you say, Shakespeare said that, Shakespeare said that, Shakespeare said that. If you did, it would be quite boring. It would be quite uninteresting. But when I was in high school, my typing teacher was also my Shakespearean teacher. And the moment we walk into her class, she's quite an actress too. The moment we walk into her class, she would just stand at the front of the room and just be in a pose or poise or some attitude. And all the class knew, you better get in your seat quick and shut up and sit down and pay attention, because if you didn't, you were not going to stay in that class. And her class was good. And so instantly we went to our seats. And then she said, out with some beautiful Shakespearean drama. And we sat there spellbound. And she told us this beautiful Shakespearean drama. And then she bowed her head. And the class was over. The entire 45 minutes of the class was over. And we had come in, been quiet. We sat there, spellbound, not even taking out the pencil from our book or anything. And we were just enchanted with her. I went on to take all the Shakespearean programs because it was so enchanting. But the thing is, she made it beautiful. Now, not one time did she mention the bard's name. Not one time did she mention Shakespeare. But she just went in there and did those things. And she played all the parts. She was just delightful and amazing. And we believed it. Uh-huh. And I had a professor of history at Marquette University, and his auditorium was like some giant auditorium, you know, like a football stadium auditorium almost, but it's big. Help me, 2,000 people. Big, really nice. That's just the classroom. And his class, everyone came in, immediately went to their seat, immediately sat down and was quiet. And then he stood up there before them. He'd say, okay, now, put aside your books. And then he went into an area of history and made it come alive so dynamically, so beautifully, so fantastically, that all of us, for all of our life, we will remember him, and we'll remember our journey through history, and history becomes therein one of our favorite subjects. Mm-hmm. You see, when a teacher loves what they're doing and doesn't try to teach, just loves what they're doing and shares it in their most magnificent self, they become the most magnificent edifice for knowledge as a role model. Now, if you want to be a role model, you better figure out what it is you want to be a role model in. You want to be a role model in your talent, in your training, in your genius, in your whatever. But once you decide, then fall in love with what it is you think your role model is. Fall in love with Shakespeare, so to speak. Fall in love with being a housewife. Fall in love with being a mother. You're the most fabulous mother in the universe. What a tribute that would be to motherhood.
That's good.
And how few there are who 100% have that thing trained into themselves. Just imagine if they had courses in high school and college on being a parent, being a mother, being a child, being a child in a family. You know, if they had just a course in that, being a child in the family, where you flow with the family and you go with the family and you respect your parents 100% regardless of how silly they are, and you respect your brothers and sisters for whom they are regardless of how you don't like their guts, you know. But the thing is, you got to be you. Mm-hmm. But have you, any of you, ever decided who you are and what you want to be? And the answer is no. Because you are such a flibbertigib, you're so interested in so many things, and you haven't settled down to one universal concept, one individual subject, one individual goal for yourself, that you cannot be my Shakespeare teacher, my history teacher. And my geography teacher was like that too. And my fifth grade dinosaur teacher, she was teaching us about dinosaurs, and I'll never forget. That's Mrs. Klockner. I'll never forget her, you know. And she was so wonderful. And she brought in these little models, you know, made out of plastic. Yeah. We didn't have all the beautiful illustrations you have today, but they were just nice. And we had imagination. And she would stand there holding this little piece of plastic in her hand, this little Brontosaurus in her hand, telling us the story of the Brontosaurus and how it had worked, you know, and how it lived together with the Tyrannosaurus and how all these... See, I'm still remembering these things. You see, now, isn't it wonderful? Now, Miss Clockner was a very wonderful woman. She was a very lovely lady. She later got married. And she was a very wonderful woman. And she changed her name, you know. But the thing is, all the time that I had her for fifth grade was probably one of the most glorious. I couldn't wait to go to her class. I can still see where it's located. It's in the right-hand corner to the north, to the east of the building, and it's on the second floor, and it was wonderful. And oh, we went into that room and we were eager for having the story be told that she had to tell. And all she did was learn one new dinosaur virtually every day. And then later she told us about how they were. But now, what is your game? What is your game? Do you want to be the most magnificent woman on the face of the earth? Do you want to be the most magnificent typist or writer? Do you want to be the most magnificent spiritual master on the world? Do you want to be the most magnificent expression of spiritual illumination? I mean, you know, these are nice things, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, what do you want? Hey, oh, yes, 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 yes. Well, bull roar. You don't want to do that. Because if you did want to, you'd be doing it. But you're not doing it because you think you're already there. And as long as you think that you're already there, no. As long as you think you're already there, then you're not going to accomplish anything. It's only when you realize that you are not there, you are it.
Aha.
You are it. You see, to be there in Miss Clockner's room was one thing, but to be listening to her speak and listening to her share what she had to say, that was it. We were spellbound. You'd say, my God, these people were hypnotists. They spellbound all you kids. Yes, they did. They were hypnotists of the most exquisite teacher type thing. They taught the love of their heart. Now, what do you teach? Do you teach the love of your heart? If you are an illumined being, as an illumined being, you would see everyone else as an illumined being. Do you think Miss Clockner saw each of our fifth grade students as a bunch of stupid kids that didn't know anything about dinosaurs? No. She wanted to tell us what she knew about dinosaurs. She wanted to excite us what she knew, because she knew we already had ideas one way or another about dinosaurs. But when she shared how dinosaurs were, my goodness. When I don't remember the lady's name. She was a slim lady that that teacher in Shakespeare. But when she got up and she started, she played her game. I mean, we all knew she was crazy, absolutely crazy. We loved her. Because she got up and she didn't care anything about anything. She just made what stage she wanted us to enjoy come alive before us. And they had to ring the bell twice to get us out of the room because we were so enchanted with living what they were living. Now, could you be the role model for what you want for yourself in your life? So much that you enjoy your own company, that you enjoy being with yourself, that you enjoy walking down the street with yourself, that you enjoy reading a book, not because you want to learn something, because you're just being yourself. And can you live your life so that no matter what anybody else says about you, you are always the same wonderful, beautiful, outstanding person? Can you, regardless of what anybody else says, can you be you? And when people come into your presence, do they feel you there? Or do they feel a fashion trend there or a model there? Or do they feel someone who is trying to teach them something? When students leave the University of Healing, I would like to think that all of them have found themselves and now are going out and living themselves. And living themselves so beautifully that all the world is beating a trail to their doorstep. Because all the world wants to share with them how wonderful they are. Because they recognize all the world is fulfilled and beautiful and dynamic right now. And there's nothing more to add, but they're just doing it. When a little child plays in the sandbox with his invisible cars and invisible toys, we think, my goodness, that's way out. That's way in. When you play in the consciousness of your mind, in the invisibility of your mind with all these things, you have it too. Now you can make that goal for yourself, that journey for yourself, that enjoyment for yourself of being me right now. And when you are, you won't try to achieve anything. You will just be who you are. Have a lovely morning and know that I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
Love you.